A young veteran who served three tours of duty was forced from his Minnesota home during an early morning FBI raid. Aaron James is facing decades in prison for helping a dying woman on the Capitol steps on January 6. Now he's questioning our so-called justice system, and he's speaking exclusively to Alpha News next. Aaron James, thank you so much for joining me. Really appreciate you sharing your story.
Hey, Liz, I'm glad to be here, and thank you very much for having me on, and thanks for helping us to share the story and what happened to myself and my family. It's been difficult, to say the least.
To say the least is right. It is not just you. Your two brothers and your father, Aaron, are all facing prison time for January 6th. You, for helping someone who was dying. We'll talk more about Roseanne Boylan here in a moment. But you're all on trial together. I know when we spoke to your mom, Rosemary Westbury, she said your trial was scheduled for February. But since then, your case has taken yet another turn. What's the latest?
So we have a status update coming up April 30th. And that's going to basically determine when the trial will be. We were working with another couple of attorneys, and things were going well. But I think they just put too much on their plate. And when it came down time for the trial, unfortunately, they just weren't ready for the upcoming trial. About 30 days prior to the initial trial date of February 12th, on January 10th, the federal government basically sent a superseding indictment, which is another felony charge against myself. And so they gave us roughly a month to look through this discovery and see what this additional felony was. And, you know, my attorneys weren't able to figure out looking through the footage that they had given us. And it was just a pretty broad, detailed felony. So that was kind of scary, you know, coming up there. And we requested that the judge allow us to drop that counsel. We actually found new counsel, a gentleman named Anthony Sabatini, who he actually just got done defending Luke Coffey, who was another January 6th defendant, who was in the same area. He was the gentleman that actually held up the crutch, which is a pretty iconic, you know, video and photo of that time.
Take us back to January 6th, 2021. Your whole family takes a trip to D.C. You were there alongside your brother Isaac, and we have visuals that can explain everything kind of frame by frame. But walk us through what happened that day.
Trump, he actually was roughly 1 hour late and an hour and a half late to the actual speaking event that we were all there to see. You know, we went there to go see President Trump. We went there to go see a sitting president. And, you know, to myself and to my family, that was a pretty historic event. You know, and we also wanted to see Washington, D.C., and none of us had ever been there. So we went to Washington, D.C. to go see Trump and really throw support behind this election integrity that was going on. And so Trump, again, showed up roughly an hour and a half late. When he first started the speech, about half an hour into it, I'd say maybe even less than that, that was the initial push on the Capitol while Trump was still speaking. And so we were there, we were listening to him, and unbeknownst to us, they were already moving barricades, taking down signs, and really pushing into the police. So there's a great video that I'd recommend everybody checking out, and it's the January 6th timeline. It really lines up what happened on January 6th and kind of goes step by step from the initial contact with the Capitol Police and the protesters there all the way through, you know, the deaths of everybody who died on January 6th up until the end of that day. And so that's really like going to give you guys a good insight of what happened. So back to what I was with Donald Trump. We were there. We were watching him. And at the end of his speech, you know, he basically said, I'd like everybody to peacefully walk down to the Capitol. We're going to walk down there together and we're going to let our voices be heard. You know, we would like for the elector, you know, the electorates to go back to the electoral certification and for them to look into some of those irregularities. And, you know, I think to most of us Americans, that seems like what has been historically done before. Look what happened with Bush and Gore. You know, there was weeks where it was over one state where it was just back and forth, back and forth. They recounted that how many times just for that certification there. And so as the American people, we had seen many incidences of, you know, irregularities where it would have been reasonable to send those back to the certification and have them look into some of those irregularities. And so it was, I guess, frustrating for all of us to feel like we weren't being heard as a people. So we did move to the Capitol, and, you know, we were there protesting. When we arrived, they had already breached the Capitol. They were in there. We were up by the doors. You know, we were kind of, you know, they're yelling. We were protesting with everybody else. And the doors opened up. And when the doors opened up, you know, people were spraying mace back and forth. There were protesters who I believe were Antifa. That's just my humble opinion, just because the way that they were dressed and the way they're operating, they'd slide in between, you know, people who were having conversations with the Capitol Police. They'd run up behind them and they were having a civil conversation with the Capitol Police. They'd put their arm in between, you know, the protesters and the Capitol Police. They'd spray the police and then they'd run away. And they'd pop up in the crowd and they'd spray and they'd run. And so it was kind of mayhem. The way that we entered the Capitol, my stepfather, he was sprayed in the face with mace. And he was escorted in and he was sat down on one of the benches inside of the Capitol. And I had seen him there and there was a large crowd that was in front of the door. It was so thick that I couldn't push my way through. And so I actually tapped on the arm of one of the Capitol Police and asked the gentleman, can you please help me in here, escort me in? My stepfather's right there. You can see him on that bench. And he's been sprayed with mace. And so in the discovery, there is a video that shows me walking with a Capitol Police officer up to my stepfather. And so that was my entrance into the Capitol. Once we got him, we walked outside the Capitol with him. And we all joined back up. My brother Jonah, my brother Isaac, my stepfather Robert, Bob, and myself. And so at that point, we started walking around to the west side where the tunnel is. Roughly halfway down there, you know, we all kind of had a conversation. Asked Bob wanted to go back to the hotel because he had been sprayed in the face with mace. And Jonah, he decided he was going to walk back with him. He'd kind of had enough of that day also. And so myself, I was still really, you know, curious to see what was going on there. I really wanted to be with the crowd. I wanted to be with the people there and just to be a part of this event. So I grabbed my brother Isaac. I said, listen, bud, you're coming with me. We're going to keep on walking through the crowd. And like the pictures that you see, a lot of them don't really show it justice. There were tens of thousands of people that were around the Capitol at that point. I mean, it was so thick, like we were walking and it would take us minutes just to make a yard because we, you know, have to slide through people, you know, taking pictures, just, you know, talking to people from Minnesota, from, you know, Florida, California, all over the state. There was just Americans everywhere and it was thick. So we wove our way up to the tunnel area. At that point, we had no idea what was going on there. Like the crowd was just so thick. It was like a wave just kind of pushing you along. And unfortunately for us, it pushed us up to the tunnel entrance. So we're up at the tunnel entrance and there is video that shows us out of the mix from where the police and the protesters were coming in contact. We didn't ever come into contact with the police, not once. And so as we're up on the right side, we were really kind of like, you know, pigeonholed, pushed into this area between a handrail and the wall next to the tunnel. And I started hearing somebody yell medic. And when I looked, I saw a woman who was basically being drugged with her stomach exposed. And it looked like she was at that point to me, honestly, close to being dead, if not dead. And the people started, you know, performing CPR on her. And my initial reaction was to push through there and help them out with the CPR, but I had seen that they were performing proper CPR. Now, my background is as a United States Navy corpsman. And so what that means is I was basically a combat medic. I was trained to be a field medic with the Marine Corps. I was attached to 3rd Marines out of Hawaii for 5 years. You know, I've done 2 combat deployments to Iraq, 1 to Afghanistan. Then I did a joint special operations mission in the Philippines attached to SEAL Team 5, again, as a corpsman, so as a combat medic. And so my initial thought is when you hear someone yelling for help, you push to that, you know, point of, you know, duress, wherever it is. And so that's what I was naturally doing. But again, I'd seen them perform a proper CPR. And so my thought was, what else can I do to help? From there, the Capitol Police, they were just spraying mace, like, you know, gallons of it. They would, I don't know how they had that much mace, but it was just coming out of there like a waterfall and was hitting the people who were performing the life-saving measures on Roseanne Boylan. So my thought was, how can I provide them some type of, you know, reprieve from this mace? So I picked up a shield from the ground, slapped it in my brother's hand, pushed him out into the, right in front of the tunnel, you know, so he could block the mace from hitting the people who were performing CPR. I grabbed the shield from the ground myself, and there are multiple videos that show just shields being, you know, thrown around. They're everywhere. So I actually picked one up, you know, and we just held the shield, and we stood there to provide reprieve from this mace that was being showered upon these people. We couldn't have been there for more than 5 minutes, you know, maybe less than that, 3 minutes. It was really quick just because the amount of mace that was being sprayed on us. My jacket was soaked. My face eventually became soaked, and I couldn't hold the shield anymore, so I had to pass it on. So I dropped the shield. I stumbled down to the pool that's down below from where the tunnel is, washed my face, found my brother Isaac, and we linked up and we walked back to the hotel. And once we got back to the hotel, you know, we showered, we all had a conversation. And at no point, you know, in this conversation, we're eating pizza and hanging out as a family, did we think that we had committed felonies for doing that? At no point.
Yeah, I think the images really speak for themselves, Aaron, but now everyone, but your mom, is facing prison time. You're facing 11 charges in total, including 9 felonies. What even went through your mind when those charges came down?
I was in shock, just in utter shock. Like, I didn't have any idea, like, what the felonies were. At first, I thought it was just for entering the Capitol. But that was only picketing, parading, and demonstrating in a, you know, in a restricted space. And so that was a misdemeanor. And many people had those same misdemeanors. And, you know, it just blows my mind. You know, we do these town hall meetings together with people. And when we get together with them, we stand up in front of them and we always ask them a question. How many of you out there have ever had a misdemeanor? You know, whether it's a speeding ticket, whether it's disorderly conduct, whatever it is. Some people raise their hand. And then we ask them, do you guys know anybody else, you know, friends, family who's ever had a misdemeanor? Again, speeding ticket, disorderly conduct, whatever it is. More people raise their hand. And then we ask them, how many of you ever had the FBI kick your door in for a misdemeanor? And no one's hand goes up. And so just that shock, it just feels like it's a miscarriage of justice. You know, it isn't equal justice under the law.
I do want to talk about that. There were 2 FBI raids at your home in Lindstrom. This one was recorded by your neighbor's doorbell camera. But let's take a look because I want people to see and to hear this for themselves. So again, for holding shields to protect a dying woman than to these FBI raids, this is what our government does. But as you said, there is more to your story. You served tours in Iraq and Afghanistan. Why did you enlist in the Navy? And talk more about that, your service, a calling you felt early on in life.
You know, I was in college at that time. And I recall I was sitting on these couches that they had, you know, just in the lounge area. And they had these TVs up on the wall. And on the TVs, they had either, you know, Fox News or CNN on, and they were showing the videos of the Marines that were in Afghanistan or Iraq, and they were on their machine guns just rocking and rolling, and they were pushing through these cities. And I'm, like, looking around at these kids that I'm going to school with, and I'm looking up at the screen, and it's like, you know, who am I really? Who do I want to hang out with? Who do I want to be? Do I want to hang out with these guys here at this college, or do I want to go and, you know, hang out with these Marines? And so I was, you know, young at the time, and I made my decision to join the Navy to become a Navy corpsman, specifically, you know, become an 8404, which is a Fleet Marine Force corpsman attached to the Marines as a medic. So that was a strong calling on me. You know, I didn't do it for any other reason other than just wanting to serve my nation and the adventure. I would have done it for free, to be honest.
You told me that it doesn't matter who's in office and what their agenda is. They are not the United States, but we, the people, are. You believe that, though, don't you?
I do believe that. You know, people ask me if I have, you know, animosity towards the military or towards the government. It isn't the government that I have animosity towards. It's those who I believe are abusing their power. I joined the military to protect, you know, the people, our country, and our constitutional republic. That's what's number one for me. The people, the country, and the constitutional republic. It doesn't matter who's in office and who's abusing that power on any side. I joined for those reasons, and I would do it again today, to be honest with you.
And you're saying that now looking at possibly 20 years in prison. Of course, we'll continue to follow your case, but where can people learn more and how can they help?
You can go through GiveSendGo/Steven. And it would definitely help out with some of our legal fees up and coming. And then, you know, if there is a repeal process, we are looking at 20 years, you know, right down the barrel at it. And that's for multiple felonies. And in most of these felonies, it says that we have a deadly or dangerous weapon. But those deadly or dangerous weapons, in the initial indictment, it said with a shield. So holding up a shield, they're considering a deadly or dangerous weapon. We're in one of our status updates, and it has been pushed. You know, they were using a shield. But it isn't up to the judge to make that decision. It's up to a jury to make that decision. And unfortunately, the conviction rates right now are about 100% for jury trials. And going to a bench trial, they aren't much better in the 99-98 percentile rating.
Well, again, we'll continue to follow it. We really appreciate you speaking out, and thank you for what you're doing to just get the word out there. I know you guys have been on the road quite a bit, and we'll put some more information about that in this story as well. But Aaron James, again, we appreciate it, and we'll be back in touch soon.
All right. Thanks a lot, Liz.
That'll do it for this episode of Liz Collin Reports. We'll see you next time.